I'd like to welcome everybody to the next version in our Global Health Perspectives podcast. My name is Derek Yach, and I'm the president of a foundation for a smoke-free world. And it's a real delight to have with me today Melanie Kussman, coming all the way from California. I have known and worked with Melanie since we actually started the foundation. She has a fascinating background, originally as a professional model who turned her sights, her camera, and her thoughts to some of the most complex problems in Africa, whether they were addressing some of the issues related to diamond mining, slavery, Ebola, not the things that people think about all the time, particularly when they read US media. So let me start, Melanie. It would be great if you could just tell us, how did you make this journey and what got you to make the journey from professional model to heading off into some of the most complex parts of the world?
Well, modeling, I mean, if you're born tall, it's just on the table. So so I did go into modeling. It wasn't something that I was suited for. I never felt satisfied or rewarded. And then having watched the process, I just said, oh, well, I think I can go to the other side and do something there. So I late in life went back to school, went to USC Film School, and ended up producing television commercials. And then in the early 2000s, when commercials went from just products into sort of the good things that people were doing for their companies, I sort of gravitated into that arena. And then, you know, my grandmother was a travel photographer in the 60s and had been telling me stories of Africa forever. And when I had the opportunity to go there and work, I instantly fell in love and really found my life passion working with disadvantaged communities and bringing to light really negative stories, but telling the hope and positivity within those negative stories sort of became the thing that I really wanted to do.
I must say something which, when I look at some of the pieces you've done, I think you get a sense that the voices and the context and the real life experiences of people who don't have a chance to be displayed in the mainline media are actually brought to our thoughts. And it'd be good if you could just tell us a bit about some of the projects that you've focused on. I know some of the most complex ones obviously were around slavery in Mauritania or Ebola most recently in Congo, but it'd be good just to get your sense of how you approach them and what have been the reality of working there.
Always my goal is to humanize them and not victimize them. I mean, let me say that again, Derek, because I'd like to humanize them and not victimize them. And I feel like a lot of times they're portrayed as victims when you see that they're living under devastating circumstances. I worked in the Democratic Republic of Congo in the largest peacekeeping mission, and to see the daily rebel attacks and, you know, villagers being hacked and still, and going on for years, and still these resilient communities were just maintaining their dignity, their happy lives as much as they could within these challenging circumstances. And I just felt like their voices needed to be heard. And that's another thing. I never tell the story. A narrator doesn't tell the story. We go in and ask them, what part of your story do you want to tell? And then string that together into a narrative. The Ebola going into a conflict zone and wearing a bulletproof vest every day to work. In Mauritania, it was the first time they'd allowed a U.S. Filmmaker in, I think, 20 years, they told me. And we went up to the border of Mali and Mauritania, where these populations in the desert are completely cut off, and it's a training ground for ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And the military troops of the Sahel G5, as well as the peacekeepers there, are doing what they can, but they don't have access to. And you know, these military troops provide health care and the best protection that they can. Most recently, I was, for these last 6 months, have been working in the Ebola outbreak in the Congo. And, you know, without medical infrastructure, with the largest population of displaced people in the world, 5 million, it's just an incubator for a pandemic. That was a real challenge. Many healthcare workers were attacked. And so it was a very rich story. And we told the story of the Congolese, of the health workers going in, and this addressing both the security issues and how they were fighting the epidemic.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to that in a second, Melanie. But let me turn to the documentary you worked with us on called The True Cost of a Cigarette, filmed in Malawi. It's one of our most popular videos. I'd love just to have your thinking of what were the ideas behind the way you were both filming it and what actually emerges from this documentary.
Well, when I was in the DRC, I was working with the troops from Malawi, and that was sort of how we came to be connected. And so I had worked with their government and some different things. And it was a chance for me to explore a whole new side of things that I've never been to the peaceful heart of Africa. So the Africa I had really been more exposed to were these more troubled places. And it was just delightful to go in and see. And I was also really moved that the foundation was not only addressing the issue of ending smoking, but seeing the unintended consequences of the incomes to these small shareholder tobacco farmers in developing nations. It was just all around, just like jump on it. Our approach was just to go to the tobacco farmers and see what their experiences are. And we found a small shareholder farmer and spent some time getting to know the family and on the farm and watching their practices. We also spoke to the head of the Tobacco Control Commission, the government side, the tobacco companies that are buying the tobacco, and it all came together. We wanted to have a balanced, true snapshot of what was happening at that moment in the tobacco industry in Malawi. And then we went to Japan and sort of got that other side of the emergence of smoke-free devices and how those were coming up to replace this combustible tobacco.
I must say it reminded me of a piece I'd seen in the 70s called The True Cost of a Cup of Tea, which took you into the plantations, the tea plantations of Asia. And certainly it makes one think about the supply chains of these commodities in very different ways. And certainly I think what the Malawi one, I think, comes out and people find is the incredible positive spirit. And then, of course, you've also interviewed some of the young, particularly women entrepreneurs who've really shown incredible passion for change in their own community.
Well, the thing that I found was that it's true for a lot of farmers. I'm from Lubbock, Texas, and, you know, you can farm, do your best, work your hardest, and at the end of the day, the cost of the crop, the price you can get for it is not within your control. And I felt like these farmers, and it's something that the foundation it was something that I saw that the foundation is big on, is including the small shareholder farmers in a more meaningful way in the value chain. And, one of the women that we followed, she just had no idea what was going on the trading floor or how to represent herself. And then you find other ones like that are, you know, diversifying and getting their communities involved. And so there's a wide disparity of different ability to access information and resources to make the most of your efforts in farming in Malawi?
Yeah, let me go back to the DRC, where we know that one of the most high-risk diseases, Ebola, really rumbled on for months and months and months, and I believe only in the last short while has this outbreak now been officially declared over. But now you came
Not
back.
Not quite, Derek. They had 7 new cases. I mean, it was down to 0 and then one day after. But anyway, they hope to have it by July 2020.
Sorry. Yeah, so you came back and you hadn't even finished, and we had the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. You came from an environment where personal protective gear seemed to be commonly accepted and understood. Contact tracing was the norm. And you were also the witness to the rollout of a vaccine. So when you came back, how did you think about that? And how have you thought about the response that you're living through now in the U.S. under this pandemic?
Well, I mean, there's so many parallels between what I experienced over these last months in DRC and what I experienced while editing the film here in the U.S. as COVID was unfolding. You know, is it real? Do we really need to be taking care of these practices? Sort of a distrust of the information and a lot of misinformation and a lot of information. So that was a key thing that I saw as a parallel. Also, as you say, the contact tracing. Ebola, unlike COVID, is not airborne, so you have to touch a surface, or touch someone who has it. So this idea of social distancing, no one is shaking hands there anymore, you're bumping an elbow. The churches and religious ceremonies, you know, you no longer give communion or take the cross. They've made all those alterations to protect themselves. And in that way, they're ahead of the curve if this comes back to hit them. And they have checkpoints on almost every road where you get out of your vehicles, you take your temperature, they take your name, and you get back in. So, and the disruption of economies, another big one. And then the celebration of healthcare workers and survivors, of course.
Yeah, so it must have been quite extraordinary. It still is, because we're still living with it.
Well, I had been in the Congo and not listening to my radio up in the middle of this war zone. And I got on my flight, I drove to Kigali, got on my flight, landed in Doha, and people were wearing masks. And I was like, what? Did I miss something? And yes, I had missed something, the start of COVID.
So how are you doing now? And how are you dealing with the risks now? And at least you can get out and do a bit of swimming and surfing.
Yes, they did open our beaches for swimming, surfing, and moving. But, you know, California, like New York, I know you guys have really felt it more than a lot of people, is one of the hot spots. California, I think, is the fourth, and Los Angeles is the hot spot within California. But people, you know, we social distance. We wash our hands all the time. When my daughter, I pretty much stayed in as requested, and my daughter is still working, and she wears her protective gear, wears her gloves, doesn't touch her face. I mean, I just think that if people don't understand, I mean, it's not that it's that you could spread it, not that we're all going to die from it. But I just say better safe than sorry and let the experts tell me what to do.
Yeah, and I wish that was the way most people reacted. Well, Melanie, let me thank you enormously. And I hope that you and everybody else do stay safe and stay positive. I think it is humbling to learn about how the practices that seem to have got on top of what's happening in the DRC on Ebola have huge implications and application here in the US if we're going to make the same progress.
Can I say one more thing, Derek?
Yeah,
I just wanted to say that a huge turning point in the fight against Ebola in the Congo was the introduction of the vaccine by Merck. And I just was so moved by the fact that, you know, Ebola is a disease that really only now affects disadvantaged communities in faraway places, and that they would devote those resources to protect this population and then donated 240,000 doses and paid for the sub-zero transport and, you know, all of the sense. And the teams there, WHO and the UN and Doctors Without Borders, you know, sensitizing people to get vaccinated. It was the turning point of this escalating to de-escalating, and that there is hope that a vaccine could come along and we can all go back to normal.
Yeah, let's just echo that, and I agree with you. Please send in any queries, questions, ideas to us at podcast@smokefreeworld.org, and we'll be in touch again soon. Thank you again, Melanie.
Thank you, Derek.